I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. This is another new episode of the LCJ Q&A podcast. Thanks so much for listening. We've got this really cool, innovative, new animated movie streaming right now on Netflix called Next Gen. And joining me right now are the film's directors, Kevin R. Adams and Joe Cassander. Kevin and Joe, thanks for being on the show today.
Hey, Jackson. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So, for both of you, this is your feature film directorial debut. So, after years of working in the animation and the visual effects departments on so many movies, Kevin, I'll start with you, and then Joe, you can jump in. How did it feel to finally be in total control of a feature?
Well, my plan for world domination, this has been a great step towards that. No, it's good. I mean, one of the things you do, right, is as you go along working in the industry, the reason that you start to write and start to want to direct is because you start to get this feeling like, damn, I think I could actually do this and possibly better. And it's a little bit of arrogance, obviously, but you kind of want to prove it. So this film is like was a tremendous opportunity for us to like say, okay, we have to put our money on the line and actually see if we can do what we think we can do. So it's been a great learning experience, but also edifying to realize that some of the things we suspected actually kind of work.
Yeah, Kevin's right, and we actually got really lucky on this as a first feature. A lot of that we owe to our producing partner Olivia Howe and her team at Bauzo, because they gave us a tremendous amount of creative freedom to accomplish this. And so, you know, a first feature is a tough thing to do at best of times, but she definitely gave us the window to say what we wanted to say, do what we wanted to do. We worked closely with them, and it was like their idea, but as a opportunity, it was hard to pass up.
And one of the big headlines to come out of this movie so far is the fact that Netflix bought it at the Cannes Film Festival in May for $30 million. That must have been a great relief for you guys to have a home for this movie. And how many of those millions did you guys get to split?
I'll tell you once I get the check for that.
I suspect it's close to none, but... But no, we were compensated fine. The real thing here is we got a chance to make these things, which is what we're in it for anyway.
Yeah, and it was great for the producers because they basically made their they paid back their investors and that takes a big weight off of them. Mm. That's a lot of money. It's not a lot of money for an animated feature, frankly, but it's a lot of money for a first feature, and the environment that Netflix created since the purchase happened has been really great and really collaborative. We got kind of lucky on this thing, and we felt like we're always we're getting to do what we want. We're getting to make the movie we want. We keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. When Netflix purchased the film, we were thinking, okay, here it comes. Here come all the crazy studio notes. But they've been nothing but supportive. They really they really see the same film. They're trying to make the same film we're trying to make. They see it the same way, and they're really supportive of what we're trying to do.
That is absolutely great to hear.
I think one of the things to add is that the film is, slightly challenging in that it's not exactly what a lot of North American people think of when they think of animation. And so, we sort of expected that if we were going to get distribution, there was going to be a lot of changes that needed to happen to it. But the fact that Netflix bought it and we're so gracious about saying, okay, well, this is the film you made and this is the film we bought, that even when they did have notes, they're making the same film we were and let us try something new. So it is an awesome home for, letting people try new things in animation, which, the market would not necessarily allow before they got on the scene.
Yeah, and you're right that it is an unconventional film. It's unconventional for animation and I think for movies in general, but it works in a lot of ways, and it is based on this comic 7723. Joe, what was your introduction to the 7723 comic?
Well, truth be told, I didn't actually see the comic originally. I don't know that Kevin did either. I think we were brought on originally as writers on this before we were asked to direct. And there was already a version of the film that was sort of in production, an early pre-production. And that's where we started from. We came on as writers to sort of help that version of it. Hmm. But then as we worked with Olivia and her team, she kind of realized that we liked a lot of the same things. So she asked us, you know, if you had no restrictions, if you could write your own version, what would that be? And we started sort of from page one. That being said, the idea of this robot who has to delete memories every night, has to choose which memories to hold on to, that's a great core idea. Mm. And that's the thing that helped me, that, you know, that was started in the comic and sort of held through in all versions of this movie. And in fact, you know, our main human character, Mei Su, you know, we designed her to be the perfect sort of antagonist to this robot, the robot who can't, you know, the robot who doesn't want to lose any memories and the girl who has memories she wants to lose. We sort of designed them to work together. But it all came from that core idea that was in the comic.
And Kevin, would you say that when you look at your cell phone, I think this plot line is really relatable to a lot of people, the storage in your phone and it keeps telling you to delete things and to keep deleting things to make room for more space, doesn't that just get annoying? And I kind of see that over the course of the film.
yeah, mildly. What is that thing, the iCloud thing?
Yeah.
That keeps coming back. I have to keep increasing the size of my iCloud because I can't be bothered to go and sort through my pictures and delete them like I should.
Yeah, I think it's annoying when I see it pop up on my own phone. And one of the things I really appreciated from this film, looking at it from a visual perspective, is the look of the buildings, the look of the vehicles, and to me, there has to be some kind of inspiration from Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. Were those movies inspirations for you guys?
I'd say absolutely. I think it's like one of Joe and my top favorite films of all time. And in fact, the style that we sort of came around to on the film, we sort of tagged it as called Happy Blade Runner.
Mm.
So we got a production designer on before anybody else, which is a friend of mine, Craig Sellers, and he's been doing work for like Guardians and Marvel movies and stuff like that. And we hired him specifically because he doesn't do animation. And our points of reference were, we're taking reference from, like, 70s neo-noir, like Dog Day Afternoon and stuff like that, and film noir, which are the same places that they're taking reference from when they make the Blade Runner stuff.
Mm.
And then on top of that, we just like a lot of the, like, the formula stuff that they were crafting in the Blade Runner world, so we took some of that on board. But, of course, we replaced, you know, some of the Japanese content with Chinese. And then we're heavily influenced by, like, a lot of 70s stuff. Mm. So, not bell-bottoms and afros, but, you know, brutalist architecture and the futurism design. And even our robots are based on, like, an old Atari and another computer. Like a... What was it, Joe? Do you remember?
Commodore.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah, I really like Blade Runner, and I like the sequel, 2049, even more. Visually stunning, and you get those visuals here. And Joe, I think that there's a little bit of a Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak vibe a little bit in this movie, too. Talk about those characters over the course of this story.
Yeah, of course, you're talking about Justin Pin and Dr. Tanner Rice, who are sort of the scientists who create all the robots, the industrialists who create all the robots in the world, known as Q-bots. We're not making a particular critique of Apple. We're huge fans of Apple, like a lot of people are. But there's a really good story about how Apple came to be. You know, the original Macintosh interface was based on a something Steve Jobs saw at a DARPA, a Defense Department contract over at Xerox PARC. That's how he saw the graphical user interface. And I always loved the idea that, you know, this revolution in the way we interact with computers came from what is essentially a program designed to fight the Russians. And there's this a sort of interesting darkness to the backstory of that. And so we took some inspiration from that there's a happy consumer product world out there, mm-hmm. but that the roots of that have, you know, the sort of deeper, darker roots. And that's Justin Pin and Tanner Rice. And they have a story and they have a backstory. And there's hints of that backstory in the film. If you go back and you look at it, you can see evidence of their history together.
And I would say there's a bit of darkness to the dog in the movie as well, because Michael Peña voices Momo. He has a very R-rated vocabulary, Kevin.
100% PG. I'll put that out there, right there.
You put Michael Peña in a booth for 2 days, and you ask him to just swear, give him like some rough outlines, and just let him go, and you realize that guy is like a profanity master. It's like an art form for him.
Yeah,
he goes on constantly and never repeats himself, and we all just sit in like a little bit of awe of it all. And at the end of the day, we only did 2 sessions with him because there was so much material to cut from.
Mm.
We could probably build another 2 or 3 movies off of the stuff that he gave us.
Man, if I ever meet Michael Peña, I'm going to tell him that you have called him the profanity master, and I think he will like that. We're with Kevin R. Adams and Joe Cassander, the directors of Netflix's animated movie Next Gen. The cast besides Michael Peña it's really tremendous. John Krasinski, David Cross, Jason Sudeikis, and one of the hottest women out there right now, Constance Wu from Crazy Rich Asians. Joe, what was it like working with Constance Wu?
Well, Constance is a pro. She's friendly. She's funny. And she's sharp. She's a comedian. And I'm one of the great things about this film is we got to work with a bunch of comedians. Even when we're doing dramatic stuff, people with that comic timing can be really, really good. There was this, there's a bit at the end of the movie where, Constance's character, Molly Sue has to come out with a kind of a confession of love for her daughter that sort of gets all of the angst and trouble, that she's been through. So just gets it all out in one fell swoop, and it's a really big speech done really fast. And in fact, when we had done the temp dialogue, the scratch track, we had scratched in the dialogue and hadn't sped it up to make it feel a little bit faster and a little bit funnier. But Constance was like, "Here, let me just try to go," and she hit it at a million miles an hour, and it's the funniest thing in the movie is Constance as Molly. Totally rolling her entire character arc up into one breathless sentence, and it's perfect.
Yeah, it is a really nice moment. And a lot of other small details you notice over the course of the movie, especially that so much of this world is consumed with advertising. Kevin, talk a little bit about the advertising aspects put into this movie, from the food that you eat at dinner time to your toothbrushes.
So there was this... you can't really answer that question without touching on the robotization of the world. So there was this thing that happened, I guess it was 80s, where like consumer product stuff was all like, it's electric. That's the big thing. It's amazing. It's like, I know you can carve your turkey, but check this knife out. It's an electric knife. And so like there was a big movement, and everything was like that. So we play a little bit on that. It also ties into the whole, technological revolution of phones that's happening right now. But that everything in the world is, made into robots. So we started from that and said, okay, well, not every robot is built by the same company. So we decided there's a couple companies in different styles, but then decided the technology. But then in the rest of the world, too, we, our art department said, okay, there's a show that's on the air that we never talk about that's called Pirate Cat. And we know what the show's about, and it's advertised in different places. And we know that there's a game that's popular out called Monkey Fighter, and that's referenced in people in crowds and so on.
So much cool stuff is explored in this animated movie, Next Gen. It's funny, it's got some action, it's got some emotion to it, it's got everything you want. Congratulations, Kevin and Joe, on the movie.
Thanks, man. We really appreciate
it.
You are welcome. Thanks for being on the show today, and thanks for everybody out there for listening to this episode of the LCJ Q&A podcast. Of course, stream Next Gen right now on Netflix, and I'll see you next time for another new episode of the LCJ Q&A.